Welcome to Just Another Hunting Podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors in collaboration with Joseph from Way Out West Adventures. We dive deep into the world of hunting, exploring tactics, gear, and unforgettable stories from the field. Join us each week as we interview seasoned experts and passionate enthusiasts who share insights and experiences to help you enhance your hunting skills. Whether you're a novice seeking guidance or a veteran hunter looking for new challenges, this is your go-to resource for all things hunting. Tune in each week to step up your game and to connect with the community who shares your love for the great outdoors. All right, guys, I'm excited to tell you, we got Mark Livesay on again. If you recall, a few months ago, we did kind of like a pre-fall podcast. Sorry, excuse me there. And hunting season is now over. We're into the heart of December. Mark has joined me this evening, and we're going to chat about his fall season, his upcoming 2025 season, and all the things he offers with Treeline Pursuits Academy. So thanks for joining me tonight, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me. You always push my bedtime, Steve. It's like you're always like, hey, you think you do? Can you jump on about 11:30? You know, p.m. I'm like, sure, for you, Steve. Anything. So
Pacific time. Pacific,
you know, now I am old, Steve. So you know, I'm used to going to bed early. Oh no, it's good to be back on, man. You know, as far as my season, I wish I had more to report, but you know what? This is going to be a great podcast because a lot of your listeners can relate to what I'm about to tell you. Because when you look up the stats for almost all Western states for DIY public land, and you take out, you know, outfitters, and you take out other residents and things like that, you're going to be hovering around 6 to 8% in the best case scenario. Well, you know, I'd like to think that we kill, everyone likes to, you know, if you looked at Instagram and you looked at all of our pages, if I mean, so-called professional hunters, you would think we killed something every time we went out.
Yeah.
And you would think we killed it something on the first day we went out. Well, it doesn't happen, guys. I mean, it doesn't happen. And so, you know, we have to work super hard at it just like everybody else. And sometimes it just doesn't work out. And so this year was one of those years that I had so much. This is one of those things where the feast creates famine, right? I said that a couple of years ago. I drew 5 elk tags in 1 year, and it was an exciting year, but it was the toughest year I had hunting elk. Now, I killed a few elk that year, but I was mentally worn down. I was physically worn down. I was traveled, you know, 5 different states, and some states multiple times. So it was too much of a good thing that year. Everybody's like, oh my, I'd have loved that. Well, you got to be careful what you wish for, right? Because you go for a week in Wyoming and you're hunting and you're just about to kill a bull and you've got him figured out. And you're like, oh shit, I got to get to New Mexico. The season starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's how my season went. And this year was a lot like it. So we went to Alaska. And we left August 24th or so. Don't quote me on these days, somewhere right around there. And the thing about Alaska is if you really, really want to get a top tier spot, I hate to, Lambert's is going to kill me for saying this, but you kind of have to go in to your spot early, like a lot early, and set up a very visible tent. And so the pilots will typically, will stay away from you if you've got an area secured. So we went in 10 days early thinking we had it. 10 days. Who goes in 10 days for a season, right?
10 days before the hunt started?
Before the hunt starts.
Man, you guys are committed. Wow.
So we fly in to a spot 10 days before, and we got this lake. It's our number one. It's plan A, right? Now, we've got some other plans, but we wanted plan A. Somebody was already there.
No way.
Can you believe it? 10 days early, somebody was there.
Did they like drop their tent off and leave, or were they still there?
No, we saw them sitting there. We flew over them. They were sitting there on the beach, hanging out, waiting. I mean, I got to give them credit.
Yeah.
I got to give those guys credit. They, so now Lampers wants to go 15 days early, right? You know, I mean, so, now it looked like they just got there. I think they literally just beat us. Because they didn't have everything quite set up yet, it didn't look like. But anyway, point is, we go in so many days early, and we get a good spot. It's not our A spot, but it's our B spot. So that brings me to my, you know, little plug here, guys. The best laid plans. You can have the best spot, best looking spot, best everything. It looks like it's just money, and it's not.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how many times I have just was so excited about a hunt area that I developed using my strategies, right? In my course, exact same strategies that I teach. I'm so excited that I did not spend tons of time on plan B, C, and D. I had them, but I really didn't put tons of time into them because I was so convinced that A was it. Well, I've been taught lessons on that so many times. So my advice is on you guys that, you know, think about planning hunts, guys, have 3 or 4 options. But don't just have them. Work them out. Have them planned out. Have them very thought out. It's not a waste of time, guys, because if you don't use it this year, you might lose it the next year or the next year if you use a good system.
Yeah.
It meaning you keep a good journal. You develop a written hunt plan where you got notes and all your stuff that makes it evergreen, right, Steve, where you can look at it 2 years from now. And now you might have to brush up a little, but it makes sense to you, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, we go in, we're in plan B, and the first day we go out and I glass up this super nice moose. He's about 50, I think he ended up being 56 or 55, 57, right in that range. He was had to be 50 inches in this zone or 4 brow tines where we were at. So I glassed him up and he was about half a mile from camp. It was a perfect spot. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't bad. And I watched that bull for 7 days in the same spot within 100 yards. Well, the plan was my hunting partner that I was going to hunt with, we were in 2 separate camps. So I was with Ryan at that time, but my hunting partner flew in a couple of days before the hunt. And then I had to get in the plane with him, and we flew to a new location. So I had to leave the bull behind that I glassed up.
Oh, man.
And I knew Lampers. I knew that SOB was going to kill that moose. And we're at opening day. I get a text message like 10 minutes into the season, moose down.
And I was like, oh my God,
which moose is it? And it was my moose. So I was happy. I mean, I'm giving him a little crap. I was super thrilled. I kind of wanted a little bit bigger moose. It ended up costing me, but so we flew into our next camp. And my hunting partner and I got there the day before the season opened into our new camp. So we didn't have time to spend 7 days glassing like we did in the other camp. So we climb up on this hill by camp. We're not in the greatest spot. Our pilot was having a panic moment, I think. He was trying to bring in too many people. And he just said, this is a good spot. I'm going to drop you guys here. And I'm like, this looks like a terrible spot. And he just literally landed the plane and kicked us out.
Wow.
So we literally had to hike up about 150, 200 feet of elevation to put our camp up in a dry spot. And which is not that bad, except when you go to Alaska, we had 5 bags. I mean, we take a lot of stuff. So anyway, I mean, we're there for 20 some days. So we hike up, we set up our camp, we go to the glassing spot, we're glassing. We didn't see any moose that night from our glassing spot. We saw some caribou and some grizzlies for sure. And nothing. So we go back to camp, and you know, in Alaska in the fall, it stays light for pretty late. It's starting to get dark, but still pretty far into the evening. So we're back at camp a little bit early. It's a day before season. Remember, it's like 10 o'clock at night, still daylight, 9 o'clock or 10, right in that range. And I walk out the tent door and I look to my left, and 100 yards from us is I know now how big it is because I know the guy that killed it. It was a 73-incher, and he was a mega, mega moose.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's just standing there. I filmed him. I have footage. I have film of him for an hour, over an hour. So in Alaska, the hunting season starts at midnight, and there's no shooting hours in Alaska.
Wow, okay.
So I texted Ryan. I said, hey, is it true that the hunting season starts at midnight? And it's true, but there was cloud cover and everything. So he just, and the moose was moving with it. He had a cow. Mm-hmm. So he just got into a position where I couldn't see him any longer about 10:30. But I thought for sure the next morning he was just going to be right there. So we get up, no moose. Next morning, we didn't see him all day. Next morning, we saw him 3 miles away.
Wow.
So we started running. We ran all the way. It's wide open, Steve, wide open. Now, there's alder patches, you know, and stuff. But we run over there, and he goes in this alder patch and never comes out. And we sat there till dark, all day, same spot, waiting for him to come out. I thought any minute he was going to walk out. And we were 500 yards from him. It was money. No, didn't come out. So anyway, I got tunnel vision on this bull, and we've seen him a couple of other times, but we hunted him. I said, it's that guy or nothing.
Yeah.
So anyway, we left, ended up not getting him. Right, they killed that one moose, and I passed up opportunities, a couple of other moose I probably should have went after, and, you know, 50, 60 range, which is embarrassing that I didn't go after him. But after seeing something like that,
yeah.
Oh man, it was hard to go down. Anyway, we come out, we're in the bar, we're getting ready to leave the next day. I've got a hunt in Idaho starting in another day or two. And we run into this resident that's getting ready to head in, and he's talking about where he's going. And I'm like, he's going to the same place we were. And I didn't say anything, you know, and then he followed me on Instagram and blah, blah, blah. Well, the day of the hunt, when he got out, he messaged me. He says, hey, we killed two bulls opening day, a 65 and a 73.
Oh my goodness.
So he sends me a picture of it, and it's the same freaking moose. The moose that I had a weird cut in the horn.
Yeah.
Had a weird cut down into his horn, and it was the same moose.
Oh my goodness.
I was happy for him, but it was brutal. So anyway, the way it works in Alaska is like the non-residents get to hunt the pre-rut, which is not as good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the residents get to start hunting when the moose are really running. So they're moving more and they're just visible more. And it's crazy about 1,800 pound animal, how they can disappear, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the Alaska trip. We stayed there for 23 days or 4 days and we flew out.
Man, that's a long trip.
It was a long trip.
So does the deck shuffle, I guess? You probably haven't hunted the heart of the rut then, being a non-resident, but I would imagine the deck shuffles a lot kind of overnight during the rut.
Oh, it does, man. Them moose are, it's crazy when they start roaming. Because remember, the moose per square mile is relatively low, right? Compared to like deer or anything else in the West, right? The ungulates in the West. So these moose, they just get on the move and they just cruise and they're calling, they're listening for calls. They're smelling, and it's crazy how these things can hear. You know, their horns are just built for amplifying sound. That's really one of their tactics. And calling moose is very successful if you're in a place that, you know, got a little more timber where they can live and you can't. We were in a pretty wide open, so we didn't do a lot of calling because we could see for miles. And yeah, they get on the move during the rut. Now, you know, a lot of units in Alaska, they go later in September. You know, they don't end in our hunt ended September 15th or 12th. I don't even remember now. But the point was middle of the month.
Yeah.
But there are other units. So you kind of have to play the game, you know, and some go a little bit later, some don't, whatever. So we are looking for more units now to go a little bit later because we feel like that's really a better time to go.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you also have to kind of juggle how many of your elk days do you want to give away? I know in Montana you can hunt pretty late into October, but if you have an Idaho tag and a Montana tag for elk and you're in Alaska till September 25th, let's just say, you're pretty much burning a lot of September.
That's what happened. That's exactly what happened. I get out by the time, you know, and you know, the flights out of there, it ain't easy.
Yeah.
It's 2 or 3 days to get out of there.
Yeah.
By the time you get back and then have to get you've got a bush flight out, and then you got the flight into this town where we stay, mm-hmm. there's only one flight per day.
Yeah.
So you go, and if it's got a problem, they can't fly for fog.
Yeah.
You're stuck.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got out like two or three, our pilot couldn't get us for about 48 hours. So we were a little late getting out of there. And so I was a little late getting to my Idaho hunt, which was immediate. I literally flew into Missoula, put my llamas in the trailer and headed to hunt Idaho.
Wow.
And so we hunted that for 10, 12 days. We had a lot of chances, a lot of great little bulls, you know, just nothing big. We saw some pretty nice ones, but we just could not get one in front of us. And I did learn, this is going to be the tell-all podcast. I learned of something really important about my elk hunting in the future is I'm getting older. There's no doubt. And I've been noticing in the last 2 years that I'm hearing elk fine. I'm hearing them fine, but I'm having trouble with one of my ears is less. I've lost more hearing in one ear than the other, right? So I can't tell direction very well. Mm-hmm. Well, one of my hunting buddies from Missouri always comes and hunts with me in the early part of one of my first hunts. And he's in the same boat I am. So we're like a mess out there. At bull bugles and I point right, he points left. And yeah. The odds are it's not either. it's that way, right? And yeah. So we struggle with pinpointing him. And I'm like, okay. This sucks. I'm going to have to figure this out. So archery was a struggle for me, a little more of a struggle this year, because now once I get close within 100 yards, mm-hmm. 200 yards, then it's no problem. But you had those long distance bugles that are giving me the problem.
Yeah.
Oh, we ran into a lot of bulls where we were at, and we had a lot of great opportunities, but we just nothing that I really wanted to get. And then we ran out of days and I had to be in Montana by October 1st.
Yeah.
So I started hunting Montana October 1st. I hunted until I think about the 18th or so. And then I had to, then what did I do then? I went, where did I go after that?
Well, let me interrupt you real quick while you're thinking about your next trip. So sure. I've seen a lot of your guys' films, obviously, with Gritty and Ryan, your guys' group. But I haven't seen any films specifically with you during like archery elk. I see you doing a lot of spring bear hunting on those films. I'm curious, do you do a lot of calling as an archery elk hunter? Or are you kind of like a 50-50 guy, a little bit of listening, a little bit of calling? Are you more of a sneaky?
Well, that kind of goes to my hearing. So in the past, I've been a caller. I love to call elk. I like to call them in. It's fun. But the reality is, you know, I've been lucky, man, Steve. I get to hang around some badass killers. You know, Sam Davis, Ryan Lampers, Brian Barney, you know, even Brian. Brian has really developed into a really good elk hunter. And, you know, and his partner in crime, Brad Hunt. I mean, these guys are killing big bulls. Let me just put it this way. All of the giant bull killers are not calling them in.
Yeah, I've noticed that trend over the last couple of years. Literally
none of them.
Mm-hmm.
They are now. They might location bugle them. They might pinpoint them, and then they go in and kill them. They spot and stalk, or they sneak in and find them. But they're not calling them in to kill them. So I have started learning and adapting my hunting. You know, I've been hunting elk for 34 years. So. Old habits die hard, right?
Yeah.
So I caught myself calling to big bulls that I should not have been trying to call to this year. And they gave me negative responses. They didn't run, but they certainly did not want to do it.
Yeah.
And then they're on high alert.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan always says, and I'm starting to get, he goes, I like to kill bulls that have no idea that I'm there. Well, the problem with that game, a lot of time is, that's the long game, Steve. You know, like
yeah.
Ryan, most people don't realize this, but Ryan will set on a bull. And I'm not exaggerating this. 10 days plus.
Yeah.
He will set on one bull. He'll wait and watch until that bull gets in a spot with the right wind and the right proximity to his cows and the right stalkable conditions. And then he'll kill it. Cause you got one chance at a 350 bull, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Once he wins you or once you spook him, the chances of relocating him and killing him are pretty minimal.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think Ryan might be a little too cautious, but dude, just look at the two bulls he killed this year. I mean, you don't have to look very far to figure out that something was working there. Right. And so I have been, to answer your question with a long way around, was I'm trying to get better at the spot and stock game.
Yeah.
So this year I dedicated almost my entire Montana tag to spot and stock. Now, you know, if you're hunting thicker country and deeper timber, spot and stock's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, I was going to say that, man. During my Montana hunt, we were fortunate to kill a bull. But the first I had a couple of units picked out that were in close proximity to each other, right? The first one was more broken up country, had some dark timber, but also had a lot of sage up at high elevation. And we were glassing a ton of bulls. We glassed 13 or 14 bulls in the first 4 days of that trip, but the elk weren't talking whatsoever. Like, I'm used to setting up my spike camp, you know, back in there a few, you know, 7, 8 miles, 6 miles, whatever it may be. And I'm hearing elk bugle around me all night. And this specific unit, it was silent. And I was, me personally, at this stage in my elk hunting career, I enjoy calling them in so much that I'm having a hard time. Like, of course, I've noticed that you guys are killing giant bulls and I know you're not calling. And I believe me, I'm thinking about that. As crazy as that might sound, I'm thinking like, okay, if I want to kill a big, big bull, I need to put this bugle tube away probably. But I just don't honestly enjoy spot and stock hunting elk with a bow for some reason as much as I do calling them in. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, I do too. I'm the same exact way. There's nothing more exciting than a screaming bull coming in, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about spot and stock too is you'll make a lot of stocks that don't work out.
Yeah.
It's very you know, when you're calling a bull and he doesn't come in or whatever doesn't happen, you don't associate that with you necessarily.
Yeah.
Like, you think, well, he might have just lost interest, or there's lots of reasons other than you failed.
Right.
But when you spot and stock, it's you failed.
Right.
So that failure is in your face, right? It's in your face. It wears on you. It doesn't go away. Like, for example, in Montana, when I was hunting in October, I had a bull that I had located, and he was moving from private to public every day, like clockwork. But there was four or five drainages that he would choose. I watched him for 3 straight days, and he kind of would just do some different things. So I thought I had him kind of patterned. So I went down there and I got in drainage too. I don't know, whatever, you know, I got in a drainage. And here he comes. And he would never leave the field till 9:30 in the morning, which was crazy.
Yeah, he's out.
He would stay that late.
Yeah.
He'd be the only elk left. Wow. All the cows would leave, the small bull, everything would leave, and he'd stay out there. So anyway, here he comes. And I think I have. He's coming right for me. I'm like, oh, this is it. And right about, you know, several hundred yards, he starts diverting. I'm like, what? And he goes up ridge 4. And he beds in there. I know it. I didn't see him bed, but I know he bedded right up right there. I'm like, oh. So then it's dry. It's crunchy. I'm not the greatest spot and stalker yet. And he's close to a 400-inch bull. I mean, he's a absolute massive bull. I mean, just massive. So I said, I'm not doing it. I said, I got to do what Lampers does. I got to stay here until he makes a mistake. Next morning, same thing. I pick a different route. He picks a different route. So for 3 more days, he went a different way. Well, then my son had a football game, and I wanted to get back for it. So I drove overnight, got back, watched the game, went back in, and I couldn't relocate him when I got back in right away, and I ran out of time. But I gave it 6 days. So I gave it a week. I hunted that bull for a week.
Yeah.
And could not – it was like – playing the roulette wheel, you know. I had I could put my marble in 1 of 5 ditches, and I just kept picking the wrong one.
Yeah.
But if I would have been there for another 4 days, the odds might have worked out, because I was really careful about the wind, and if it didn't work out, I didn't go, and I didn't move around. If I picked 3 and he was in 2 or 1, I backed out and I left it. So I don't regret the strategy. But I keep thinking, man, it was not that thick of it was real sparse timber. I'm like, I think I could have snuck in there. But it was so dry and noisy, and I just didn't think I could do it without being picked up. Because the sparse timber is great for you seeing the elk, right?
Right.
But it's also great for them seeing you.
Yeah. And I mean, they're surviving every day. So they're,
A bedded elk is not easy, especially a 400 inch class bull.
Yeah.
That's lived for 8 or 9 years. Right.
Right.
So I just decided to let him go, and I just waited every day, and I couldn't get it done. And, so I'm trying to be more like Lampers, so to speak, but, I've only been doing it for a couple of years. So, I killed a nice bull the year before, it was a kind of a combo calling. So what I'm starting to do now, Steve, is with my calling, when I'm spotting stock, is I only use two calls. I use location bugle from a distance sometimes just to get them figured out. And I use strictly calf calls. Mm-hmm. That's it. Nothing else. And I find that a lot of the elk, especially big bulls, they may not come to a calf call, but they don't run from it either.
Right. They don't feel threatened.
But you try a cow call? Yeah. No. You try another bull vocalization? No. So, and I've learned that. I can't take credit for that. I learned that from Joel Turner. Joel Turner really preaches this. You only make calf sounds.
Yeah.
The minute you start making mature cow sounds, your hunt is on the downslide on the big bulls. And so I'm working that angle. Well, just for example, the bull I killed, I just got him back from the taxidermist. I went and picked him up, got him day before yesterday. He was even bigger than I remember. And but that bull, I called, you're not even going to believe this, but I called that bull in 6 different times.
In the same day?
In the same day.
Wow.
And he smelled me on the third time.
Wow.
He circled me and smelled me and ran over the hill. Like, I thought he was in the next county.
Yeah.
Like, I could see the dust across this plowed field where he ran over the horizon.
Wow.
So I moved a mile away from that. Okay? And this is open country. So I gave up on him, and I moved. I got on another bull. I'm doing the calf calls, only calf spectrum. And the other bull's kind of acting like he's coming up, but he's still down there in this coulee down at the bottom. And I look to my right, and here's that same bull back that just ran away about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
He has circled around, and holy, he's back cow on me again. Well, he knew where I was at, but he didn't see me, but he knew I was there, and he couldn't see anything. So he left. So I moved. I did another series. He came back again. And then finally, the third time, I killed him because I called and I ran. So what I did on the third time was I did a calf series, maybe a minute of just calf calls, and I ran up about 80 yards and set up and didn't make a peep. And I sat there, and I almost gave up, Steve. I almost gave up because I'm like, oh, man, I've called him in too many times. And I was just about to get ready to move, and I just looked through the timber, and I could see something slow moving. I mean, he was just barely moving. And I'm like, and I thought it was a different bull, you know? And this bull is unique. He's the one I killed with a crazy one horn.
Yeah.
So you can tell it's him, right?
Yeah.
Well, he puts his head down. I'm like, holy shit, it's the same bull. And he crept up to get a look.
Yeah.
At where I was, but I ended up still had to shoot him at 55 yards. But anyway, I killed him. And, finally, but only calf calls. He didn't really ever, now he got disinterested, but he never spooked except for when he smelled me.
Yeah.
But think about that. That bull absolutely smelled me how I know he smelled me was I walked the way I walked when he hit my track is where he spooked.
Yeah.
It wasn't him smelling me. He smelled my track.
Yeah, your scent.
Yeah, so he spooks. So that bull overcame. This is a pretty mature bull, right? I don't know how old exactly, but I'm guessing 6 to 7 years old. And he spooks, but he still came to that calf spectrum call again.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's a good tip, man. I've really changed my thinking on this cow calling business. And now, I'm not saying you can't cow call in a lot of bulls. I'm just saying this next level bulls are, they're a little wise to that stuff. And what really, who's really wise
is the
lead cows.
Yeah.
I think that's your problem more than the bull, right?
I would agree.
If you get a lone, if you get a lone bull, a big mature lone bull, which you're very rarely going to find that time of year, then maybe it might work from time to time. And you know, guys, I hear guys, well, I called in this 380 bull. Sure you do. I mean, it happens, guys. Yeah. There's no absolutes. It's just the trend that I'm noticing is that's what I'm seeing. And you're seeing it too, obviously.
Yeah, I've had, it's weird. I've only hunted Montana twice. So I definitely don't know the state, you know, by any means. The first time I went to Montana, I went after Idaho. So I went early October, later in the season. And I started my hunt off locate bugling. Had great success the very first afternoon, called a bull in. But after that, I was silent for four more days. And I was actually talking to Jermaine, one of the World Elk Champion callers on Instagram. And he's like, man, he gave me a tip about just try cow chirping. Just give it a day of cow chirping. See what happens. And so I quit bugling and I wasn't calf calling. I was just cow chirping. And the last half of that hunt, we called bulls in every day that would come in running. Like you could hear them trotting through the timber to just those cow calls. Now, with that being said, we weren't able to kill a bull because majority of them actually came in silent, but we were getting the action, but yeah, we weren't able to set up, you know what I mean? Because they were, it's like all of a sudden, boom, there's a bull and then you're busted.
Yeah.
And then this year, again, my second time in Montana, we were struggling with the calling thing. So it's definitely had me thinking about what I need to do differently, at least when I go to Montana for some reason. I'm just not having a lot of luck bugling over there. I don't know why.
Well, you know, it's just, you know how I say it with East County, right? Multiple tools is the best way to go.
Yeah.
If you're a one tool guy, if you're a one dimensional guy, you've already decreased your success.
For sure.
But when it comes to calling, spot and stalk, bugling, calf calling, guys, you got to know how to do it all. But what you've really got to start learning is when to not do it and when to do it.
Yeah.
And being able to look at the hunt, like you're talking about, be able to analyze like, hey, this is what they're doing and switching your tactics. But a lot of guys just keep doing the same thing, expecting different results. I mean, that's the definition of stupidity, right?
Yeah.
And you just keep bugling, you keep doing the same thing, and you keep just praying, you keep wishing that something's going to happen. Well, maybe take a different approach. You know, start cow calling or calf calling during the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Start going in the middle of the night. We go out in the middle of the night a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like it, especially in grizzly country. They don't like it. It's uncomfortable, but it works. And, you know, in the October realm, I have found that the bulls the herd bulls have their cows pretty tight still in the first of October, at least in Montana. So calling herd bulls is virtually impossible, but some of these very big satellite bulls can be called in, but they're not stupid either. So those calf calls and they work. But what a lot of guys do, man, they get in there and they're doing everything right. They're calf calling and nothing's happening. Like you said, they're quiet. They're not. And then all of a sudden they can't take it anymore. So they got to rip a bugle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's over.
Yeah.
And so like you said, I can't tell you how many bulls that I've called in with that calf call. Like that bull I killed, mm-hmm. six times I called him in, right? He never made a peep in six times. I never heard him bugle once. I called in the wide open. Early in the morning, I was in the dark, which was a mistake. I set up in the wide open. I was behind this little bitty, not little bitty, but this big sage bush in the middle of freaking nowhere, like a dumbass. And I'm cow chirping in the dark, just seeing if I can get a response.
Yeah.
I look up on the, and I could see him in the dark on the horizon. And I could see there's a big bull. And I was like, oh, and he's coming on a trot. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm in the wide open. I'm like, so I didn't make a peep, right? And I don't think he really knew where I was. So he got cut about 80 yards from me. And he was just looking around. He was just looking. It was, now it's light. course. And I'm just like, please leave, please leave, please leave. Because I knew I had a chance with him if he could leave. So he left, went back towards the timber. I grabbed my stuff, circled around, ended up, you know, long story, but kept, and then I got on him again, called him in again. And he circled me the third time because he's like, I'm not playing this game. He smelled me. And then I called that bastard in an hour and a half later again. And, but I never switched my tactics. I stayed strictly with that cow chirp. Very short, almost, to be honest, a little bit almost like lost calf, like a little distressed.
Yeah.
And he couldn't take it. He just like, couldn't take it.
Kind of long and drawn out a little bit. Like
No, not long at all. You do not want, in my opinion, you never want to get close to the calf spectrum.
Okay, so length short of call. And sweet. Short and sweet.
No mews. You're talking meow, meow, meow.
Yeah. Just
little tiny, little, the tinier the better. And, you know, Joel says elk are just natural pedophiles.
Yeah, yeah, so I've heard him talk about
you,
it.
You heard him talk. And so oh, yeah. I used to, everybody laughs and everything else, but you know what? I think he's right.
Hold some water.
The dude calls in a lot of elk. Holy cow. So you can't dispute some of his stuff, man. You can say what you want to say, but so anyway. So yeah, Montana. So Idaho, Montana, dude, I worked hard. I hunted from August 24th until November the 20th in mule deer rifle. Now I was pretty picky with my butt with my gun, but still till November 20th. With 6 days, 7 days off.
Wow, that's, man, that's
a crazy season for what I got to show for it. So I'm just telling you guys that, you know, I could sit up here and make excuses and do whatever, but guys, I put in a lot of effort and a lot of days and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it's just the way it goes. But I'm just as excited for next year as I was this year. It's just, you just shake it off and you move on, you know? And now Ryan had, as usual, absolute epic year. You know, Brian Call, you saw he killed a lifetime bull, right?
Yeah.
They've killed wolves. Ryan just had a great wolf hunt and killed a cat. He just posted it today, killed two mega bulls. So our group of guys did extremely well. This year just wasn't my year to do very well. But so yeah, I'm working on my tactics. I'm in a transition too, Steve. I'm transitioning my style because I've killed a lot of elk and I don't want to kill, and I'm not being elk snobbish either. I just, you know, I'm getting older. If I'm going to kill some 350 class bulls, it needs to happen.
Yeah.
The next couple of years. So I'm really concentrated on it. And if you're concentrated on that, you're going to have some years you don't get a bull.
Yeah. I was going to say when we started this podcast off, you were talking about how low the success rates are on public land DIY. You know, and but when you take into consideration a guy like you that's trying to kill an upper age class animal, those numbers come
dismal.
I mean, there's not even a percentage left, right? So
no, it's probably less than a percent, right?
Honestly, I mean, to kill a bull over 320 or 330, you know, like you're trying to do 350 plus or whatever in that upper age class, you're really testing your skills for sure.
Well, think about it. So it's even worse than it sounds.
Yeah,
because you've got that list of people. Remember when you take the list of bulls that get killed,
mm-hmm.
and you got Brian Barney, which is going to kill a giant every year.
Right.
You got Lampers that pretty much kills one every year. You got Sam Davis. You got all these guys.
Yeah.
They make the percentage even lower for the rest of us.
Right. Right.
Because they're in that number, right? That 1% number.
Yes.
Also includes those guys.
Well, even finding a bull of that, you know, stature is a feat in itself. It can be.
Well, and that's the thing. See, that's the non-sexy part of what right. we do.
Yeah.
People don't realize we hunt for, well, this year, now Lampers is going to beat me this year because the dude hunted damn near the whole month of December so far. And I didn't. I actually am doing some work. But, and I always miss Thanksgiving because I have to go back to work at my other company. But I still will be over 125 days.
Yeah, that's impressive.
In a tent.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the West or Alaska. I went to Alaska twice.
Oh, you did?
you know, we went spring. We didn't even start with the spring. So Ryan and I went to Alaska in the spring, and for black bears, which everybody's like, why are you going? Dude, the bears are so big, so big.
Yeah.
And so we killed two dinosaurs up there within 20 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
We were taking pictures of my bear. I think we talked about this before. We were taking pictures of my bear when his bear walked out. And my bear was bigger than his by an eighth of an inch of the skull.
Wow.
So, I mean, still bigger, right?
Yeah.
But
giants, though.
I think his was a little longer. That's what he keeps saying. We don't know for sure. But they both were over 7 foot.
Wow.
You know, 7 foot plus bears, both Boone and Crockett's. They were so big we couldn't even roll them over hardly. One person, we couldn't roll them over. That, you know black bears. You can roll black bears around, right?
Yeah, they're pretty small.
We literally could not roll these bears over. They're so big.
Yeah, damn.
And they're so fat still. So anyway, we had a good spring. So I had a good spring and killed a couple bears. Ryan killed a couple bears. And then we rolled into the fall. And he had a great season. I had a mediocre season. You know, I had a good time, though. I mean, even though it's my first Alaska moose hunt, you know, I don't even know what I was thinking. On your first moose hunt and you got your mindset on a 70-inch moose, that's stupid. Yeah. That's just stupid. But
I don't blame you, though. You probably felt like you were going to kill it. I mean,
where could he go?
Yeah, I mean, it's a moose. They're huge.
I could see for 5 miles from our camp.
Yeah.
But somehow he avoided us.
So
he never left the area because that resident went back to the same area and killed him on the first day.
That's crazy.
So he was there the whole time, and I just could not put my eyes on him.
It's crazy how they can hide sometimes. I've never hunted moose, but just animals in general, they just appear and they just disappear. It's wild.
Especially in the wide open. People think wide open is just easy hunt. It's not always easy. Every little roll of the terrain, every little ditch, every little bend, every little patch of trees, they just know how to work it, right? And especially deer. You know, deer are just masters at, well, they call them a gray ghost, right? Because of the reason they just... And these giant bucks can be in these wide open areas and you just can't find them.
Yeah.
If they don't move, you know, it's tough. So, that brings us to the Montana rifle season was, you know, Montana deer are in trouble. I'm just going to tell you right now. They are in big, big trouble. Montana FWP is an embarrassment to the conservation community. I mean, I just got to say it. I hope they're listening. They have embarrassed themselves the way they've managed the deer population in the state.
You know,
we hunt them with a rifle for 5 freaking weeks through the entire rut.
Yeah.
And they give away, the state legislature sets the number of tags that can be given out. And from everything that I've read and everything that I've heard, they're exceeding that number by multiple. So they're breaking the law and nobody's doing anything about it.
What about the doe tags?
And then they give out tens of thousands of doe tags.
Yeah.
What state hunts mule deer does? Tell me one.
I don't know.
None.
Yeah.
That's how stupid Montana FWP is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been kind of quiet about it, but I'm not going to be quiet about it anymore. It's an embarrassment. And they should all resign.
Yeah, I get
to be honest.
I can't say that I've only hunted Montana deer one time, and the buck that I shot is behind my head. But I've been dying to go hunt mule deer in the rut, and I drew a general tag and went over there and hunted. We hunted hard like we always do, and we went into this wilderness area and hunted a couple days back there, spike hunted in. We didn't see a single freaking deer the first day.
Not even a doe.
Not even a doe. And we were 5 miles from the truck. No trail. Could see for miles. Two guys glassing all day, all night, nothing. The next morning, we're like, we got to get out of here. We should have seen some deer. I mean, period. I know it's only one day, but we should have seen some deer. We're in Montana. Come on. So we saw a couple of does on the way out. But I guess my point is I was just utterly shocked at how
in great habitat too, right?
Yeah, I mean, this area, I'm not going to say the unit or the district, but this area Sure. historically has produced, it looked from what I found, a ton of bucks, a ton of deer, a ton. And I mean, the best day I had on that hunt was I saw 25 deer, but some of the days two, some of the days 10, like to me, that's not very many deer, period. And for bucks, that buck was by far the most mature buck we saw, by far. And I don't know. I was very disappointed, to be honest with you.
Well, we we were in an area. We tried a new spot, which I tried a lot of new spots. My son, I took my, me and my son. We went into this new area, and in one day, we glassed 100. This is how bad it is. We glassed 100 over. We stopped counting at 150. 150 does in one day, and not a single buck. Now, that's
Wow.
not true. There was spikes hanging
Yeah.
around the mom still, but
I get what you mean.
no branch antlered bucks.
Yeah.
And the next day, over 125 deer. And we saw one buck on a ridge after dark walking out. And so they've killed off all the bucks.
Yeah.
Now they're slowing down on the does. Well, the thing is, the residents don't kill a lot of does. What happens is the non-residents, and I don't blame them one bit. They pay $300 for a deer tag. They come to Montana. They hunt their butts off. They get down the last day. They're like, I want to take something home, meat.
Yeah.
So they shoot a doe. Can't
Yeah.
blame them.
Yeah.
So not only do they give out doe tags, Steve, every not every general deer tag is an any deer tag.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's freaking embarrassing. And so we've it's going to take years for
Recover.
Montana to recover.
Yeah.
We have quit hunting areas, see, because the deer population have just plummeted.
Yeah.
Now there's still some big bucks in the high country and the mountains way up in the, but man, a lot dudes just don't want to go after those bucks, right?
Yeah.
And now guys like you do, but and we're gonna probably start switching to some of those big gnarly chocolate mountain bucks
Yeah.
until some of these more breaks country, flatter eastern kind of country can come back if they ever change anything. There's lots of talk about changing things. They've taken away some of the doe tags. I don't even know why we have any, but they're nowhere near where they need to be. But
Yeah.
now, who doesn't like a 5 week season, right? But it's too long.
Yeah,
We
it's
cannot hunt deer with a gun until freaking December 1st, practically.
right. I
Just
mean, look at
can't.
Idaho. I mean, yeah, do I would love to hunt. I mean, we're hunting mountain bucks in Idaho, in the burns and the, the nasty country, but it's October. So to find a big mature buck is way harder because they're timbered up. They have a
Right.
chance to survive. Do I wish I could hunt them during the rut? Of course, we
Sure,
all
you do, but
do.
that's why they're all there, though.
Right. And I mean, backing up to Montana, I mean, I kind of got a little exaggerated there. We had a great hunt. My buddy and I both came home with bucks. Can't complain. But I was just, I've talked to so many guys that have hunted Montana their whole life. Guys that are your age hunted there for 30 years, and they're telling me stories, where they're seeing 50, 60, 70, 80 deer a day. They're passing on, medium 4 points over and over and over again, and they're able to find a handful of mature bucks over a week period. So I had this in my that in my mind, when I went over there, we were going to see a good amount of deer and have a few more opportunities. But to be honest with you, it was not even close to what I was expecting. So.
Well, and Idaho, I mean, as much as I'd like to hunt them in the rut too, they gotta do it right.
Yeah.
They you can put in for a few of these late season tags, but they give out like three,
Right.
five.
Yeah.
So they're very, very sought after and very hard to get, right? That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to draw that November tag,
Yeah.
good on you.
Yeah.
And they could kill a couple, you can kill a cranker buck, right?
Yeah.
But like in October, those bucks are still there.
Yeah,
They're
they're
just
just
not
not.
easy to get.
Yeah, they're not
They're
easy to find. Yeah.
nocturnal. They're in the timber, like you said. They're not coming out in the open. They're not moving around much in the daylight. But there's, you can get it done. So what, most of the tags end on the 24th of October, right around there.
Yep.
It's right about the prime time, right?
Yeah.
And it's perfect, really. I mean, and that's why Idaho has great deer. The only thing that kills deer in Idaho is the winters.
Yeah, the wolves.
And the wolves in the winter. Lions.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it ain't because they're overhunted or they're killing too many, because their seasons are short.
Yeah.
And they regulate the tags to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, I mean, they manage the resource. I mean, you got to balance, right? They need the money to take care of the wildlife, so they've got to sell some tags. But they manage the resource pretty well, I feel like. And they also give the residents that live there priority. And
right, which they should.
They should. They live there. They should have priority. You know, I'm right. A non-resident. I would love to have the ability that they have, but I don't live there, so I don't deserve them. That's just how it works. And that's what kind of kills me about Washington too. Nobody talks about Washington, but there's some awesome hunting here. But you know, they let you kill all the cows too here, and the elk herds have started to take a freaking beating. I mean, they have for years, but. And some of the units here on the coast, they recently removed those cow tags, which I'm super happy for because, and I'll admit, you know, in my earlier years of hunting, I shot cows, but as I've matured in my hunting career or whatever you want to call it, I realized that you're killing two elk basically. And yeah. you need the cows to keep that herd in good shape. So the whole doe killing and the cow killing, I wish they would just stop it, period.
You know, or just make it, it's like they can't, they wait until it gets overpopulated and then they wipe everything out. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just have a happy medium?
Or just draw those tags, make the cows and the does a draw tag and.
Exactly. You know, keep a few, whatever it takes.
Youth but this, or something.
It's like they either have doe tags or now they're like, we're in so much trouble. We got to cut them all out.
Yeah.
And, so what sucks is like my son is 15 and he loves deer hunting. And now he's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 years of shitty deer hunting in Montana.
Yeah.
During the prime of his hunting career. So we're going to have to look for some other states because Montana's jacked up the whole operation. Right.
I feel you there.
So
my daughter's almost 12 and I was hoping to, which I probably still will try, but apply next year for her to draw a general deer tag. And you want your kids to be successful. And I, you know, as you get older, filling your tag isn't necessarily successful, but as a kid, you know, a 12-year-old kid or 13-year-old kid, you want them to punch their tag. So they're not bored. They feel like they got what they went there for. And that's my fear is taking her over there. Maybe I just was in a bad spot that time or whatever, but you want your kids to have good experience for a couple of years.
No, you weren't. It's a trend, dude. It's well, let me put it this way. I talk to a lot of guys. I get a lot of stuff. Ryan, all of us talk to a lot of people. I haven't had a single person tell me in the entire state of Montana, man, I saw so many nice bucks this year.
Yeah.
No. Man, I worked so hard for this buck and it wasn't even a great buck, but I killed him on day 67. I mean, not really. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And literally it's changed almost overnight, you know, and they try to blame it on blue tongue. They try to all it's, which is bull shit.
Yeah. And the drought,
whatever.
Yeah.
It's mismanagement.
Yeah.
It's mismanagement. 100%. It's their fault. They need to accept it and move on. But they manage by knee jerk reactions in Montana. Like when it's in dire straits, mm-hmm. and now they're going to cut everything. They're going to cut the seeds. They're going to cut all the things. They're going to do these things. When if they would have managed them all along, we wouldn't have had to do this. So anyway, that's enough about that rant. But so anyway, that was the wrap of the deer, and we did have a chance at a couple mega deer, and the stock just didn't work out. So we were able to turn up a couple big ones, but we had to hunt hard and a lot of days.
Yeah.
For a 180 class buck, right? A 180 class buck in Montana is not easy to come by. And it's not easy to come by anywhere, but it's particularly hard in Montana. You're talking about a 5 or 6 year old buck that I don't even know how 5 or 6 year old buck makes it 5 weeks of rifle hunting.
Yeah, I don't know.
6 weeks of archery and 5 weeks of rifle.
Yeah.
And now we got what? We got not only we got 6 weeks of archery, 5 weeks of rifle, then the geniuses at FWP.
Yeah.
and added another week of muzzleloader in December.
The Heritage muzzleloader.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's like they don't want any deer.
They don't want anything. They want to wipe the landscape clean.
Yeah.
And now with the rumors, well, I don't even know if it's a rumor, but I hope something comes out of this where they're exceeding the legislative caps by multiple.
Really?
Like they're supposed to give out 15,000 tags and they're giving out like 45. Really? Something like that. I'm not saying that's the numbers.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's what I've been hearing. So the reason I'm putting it out there is I hope that somebody digs into this and figures out what the heck happened.
Yeah.
If that's true, holy cow. I kind of hope it's not true because I have no faith of Montana FWP, and I'm going to have even little faith if I find out that's true.
Well, so yeah, so learned something from it.
Anyway, so lessons from this podcast, guys, is that, you know, you got to stay in the game. You're going to have years like this. You're going to have seasons like this. And maybe you've had two or three, right? It's all right. You got to keep your eye on the prize, you know. And most people realize, like, I always, you know, I don't always, but I started using this example. People say to me, like, man, what's it like to hunt with Ryan Lambers? I'm like, well, let's just be honest. It's not that cool because he kills all the big stuff and then you have to pack it out. Number one, you know, and everybody's like, well, I want to be more like Ryan or these guys. Right. But you don't realize Ryan hunts 100+ days a year. Let's just use the number 100.
Yeah.
Well, the average dude might be able to do 10 days a year with job and family and everything else. Right. So for every year that you hunt, Ryan's got 10 on you.
Mm-hmm.
So in 10 years, think about that number in 10 years.
Right.
You can never catch up to his experience level is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
No.
And people go on Instagram and they see all this stuff and, you know, everybody always posts successes, right? Of course.
Yeah.
But the reality is, You got to do work with what you got, and you got to educate yourself. You got to listen to podcasts like this. You got to pick up these nuggets like this calf calling tip. I'm telling you guys, and all these little nuggets you pick up is what's going to move that needle for you a little bit more. So I always say this about my course: if you can't catch up with experience, which you're never going to, I mean, how many people can hunt 100 days a year? Not many.
No.
And he's way more than 100. 100's the bare minimum. And my wife is trying to talk me into hunting 100 days a year right now. She goes, honey, could we just set a limit of 100? Like, no. No. When I turn 70, I'll stay at 100. So anyway, my point is, if you can't become a better hunter with experience, Steve, right?
Yeah.
There's only one other way to become a better hunter. And it's education.
Absolutely.
We've got all these tools. We got this podcast. We got lots of other podcasts. You've got courses. You've got blog art. If you really, really, really want to do it, you've got to be a sponge and you've got to just take all the, man, when I started hunting elk 35 years ago, there was none of this. I was from Missouri, dude.
Yeah.
Nobody hunted elk. It was not even cool.
Yeah.
You could, like, always, I drew 6 out of 8 years for New Mexico.
Yeah. Wow.
Can you believe that?
No,
I don't even, but that was in the 90s, dude.
Yeah.
That was late 90s, right? Before you were even born. So
I'm a little older than that. Okay. I was born in the 80s. All right.
I graduated in the 80s. So you are older than I thought. But my point is like what you have to give up an experience, you can make up a little bit for. And now it's not equal for equal. You can't beat experience, right? But education is a powerful tool. So many guys just come out here. They do the same thing they did the year before, or even worse. They hunt the same area they did the year before because they're used to it. They're not, and they wonder why the success needle isn't moving.
Right.
Well, you have to ask yourself, what did you do this year that you didn't do last year?
Yeah.
It did nothing, probably.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the poster child for that speech right there. Like, without between, like I told you earlier before we hit the record button, I took your Tree Line Pursuits course when it first came out. But before that, I was a Go Hunt Insider member. I didn't apply out of state before Go Hunt. No one in my family hunted. We did a lot of fishing, but my dad didn't hunt, uncles, all that kind of stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like it has to be kind of a lifestyle. It can't be something that you pick up in August and start thinking about hunting. If you use the resources that are out there, like the Tree Line Pursuits Academy course and Go Hunt's Insider membership with these strategy articles and the draw odds and the unit profiles and Google Earth and all these things out there, I can truly say that it makes a huge difference. I mean, I've picked up so many more tags. We've killed bulls and deer on every trip we've been on, pretty much in new units, places we've never been before. Don't know the roads, don't know the unit, don't know anything about it. It just comes down to really like, how bad do you want it? And are you willing to put in the work in the off season that it takes to have a great plan when the season comes around? That's my honest opinion.
And it's not as hard. You can speak to it. It's not as hard as people kind of probably have it in their mind that it's going to be.
Right.
You know, the hardest part is suffering through my 40 hours of course.
Well, you got 2 years to take it. So it's plenty of time.
2 years. It's long. It's, you know, and some of it gets a little dry, I guess, probably, but you, there's so much information there for people that struggle with it. Right. Mm-hmm. You can't kill. I mean, I don't care how fit you are. I don't care how good you are with your bow or your gun. I don't care if you spend $1 million on gear. I don't care any of that. If you can't find elk, you can't kill elk.
Yeah.
So you have to find elk. That's job one. And or deer, whatever you're after. You've got to find them to kill them. And there's a strategy. There's some things that I've learned in 34 years that are commonalities between every elk that I've ever found. They're very likely to be in these XYZ places, right?
Yeah.
And you know what I talk, it's odds multiplication. Like if you can stack up the odds, your chance of finding elk are way higher. And if you can find elk, you're killing elk is not that hard. If you're in elk if you can put yourself in the elk, the actual killing part, I mean, it's not easy, but it's certainly easier than finding elk.
No, you just need the reps and the opportunities. Like I feel like for us, it usually takes, we've killed elk on our first setups before, but only once, which was this year. Normally it takes 4 or 5 encounters. And usually in that 4 to 7 encounters, you kill an elk or you get a legitimate chance at killing a bull.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So if you have a good plan, like I personally believe, and I tell my buddies this all the time, like your plan is the most important thing. Fitness, I would say, would be second. And then you can go fourth and fifth down the line. But having multiple hunt plans that you can actually hunt within that unit and actually get to, and you know what I'm saying,
right?
You're gonna kill. It's if you show up with just plan A and plan B, you pull into plan A, there's 10 trucks at that trailhead, now that plan shot, you go to plan B, you go in there's no elk for whatever reason, now your hunt's just a mess.
People go home early. You know, I talk about this in the course all the time, guys. Here's the thing: if you have, like you just said, plan A, B, C, and D, and you're on plan B, things are not going good. You're halfway through your hunt. Let's say you're 3/4 of the way through your hunt. Your wife's telling you how she's missing you, and your kids are crying for you on your calls, and you haven't seen an elk in 7 days. It's easy to pull the plug, guys.
Yeah.
It's easy. And I'm not saying you shouldn't if with certain situations, but when you know that in your back pocket you have a C and a D already worked out, you know how long it's going to take you to drive there, you know where you're going to camp, you know where you're going to glass from, you know where you're going to call from, you've got all the benches marked, you know you've got a strategy, you're about 90% chance of making a move to C versus going home.
Right.
I can't tell you how many guys have told me that have taken my course and have said, Mark, when things got rough and I'd be 4 or 5, I'd just go home early. Yeah. And I regretted it the whole year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I've learned anything from Ryan, is you never go home early, no matter what.
Yeah.
If it turns into a camping trip, so be it.
I can speak to that.
You're still going to learn. You're still going to learn the backcountry. You're still going to work on your bushcraft skills. You're going to learn how to navigate. You're going to learn your gear. You're still going to learn how to suffer mentally.
Yeah.
Sometimes that suffering is going to be your reward in the future years. You never go home early. You never even go home early that day you're supposed to go.
Right.
If you can hunt the morning on your last day, you hunt it.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, well, if I killed a bull, I don't have time to get it out before I have to do X, Y, Z. No. You kill the bull and you call in.
Yeah.
You pivot. Pack the son of a bitch all night and you get it done. But if you go in with that mentality that I am not leaving no matter what, you're already winning. You're already winning.
Yes.
And you're smiling because you've probably been there, right?
Okay, I got to say this real quick. My very, very first Idaho archery elk hunt, we had 8 days to hunt, which at that point in my hunting career, I thought was a long time, which looking back, it's not. But we've been in bulls every day of this trip. From the moment we set up our spike camp, we were in bulls, but couldn't kill one. Long story short, we come down to day eight, right? And we grinded out all day. I missed a bull. I shot right underneath of a bull at like 60 yards or 50 yards. I can't remember the exact number. And I'm feeling like down in the dumps, like, oh my God, dude, I had my chance. We've been grinding and grinding and grinding. And the thought crossed my mind, like, man, I've had enough. And it wasn't an hour later, my brother sends off a bugle. A bull answers directly across the drainage. We drop down, go up the other side, call that bull into 19 yards, shoot him frontal, arrow goes all the way through him, sticks on another tree, and that bull falls over dead. And we ended up staying late another day to pack that bull out. And I mean, that just goes to show you right there that it literally changes in just a split second. It just takes that one more chance, one more moment. You never know what's going to happen. And if you leave early, you don't even know what could have happened because you're gone. So I firmly believe it, man. Grind it out. If you got the time, grind it out.
You know, and I'm glad I love that story because it cements that. But whether you kill the bull or not, don't underestimate what I just said. If you would have stayed and grounded out and had another missed opportunity or had whatever, you just banked more knowledge, right? You got more, you learned how to cross, you got across the canyon, you got the wind right, you did all the things, or maybe you didn't get the wind right. But if you don't have that experience, you do not learn from that experience.
Yeah.
Guys, you're already, most guys, if you can hunt 10, 14 days a year, you're behind the curve compared to guys like Ryan, whatever, already. Why would you want to leave at 12?
Yeah.
You're already behind at 14, and now at 12, you're way behind.
Yeah.
Stick it out and stay and stay and stay. Because what it will do is not only improve your like experience level, but guys, there is nothing better. There's nothing that will make you a better elk hunter faster than being miserable. I know that seems weird, but being mentally fatigued, being physically broken, being nutritionally defective, being partially dehydrated, not thinking clearly, missing your family, those things harden you. And the next time you're faced with it, it's going to be a little easier to deal with.
Yeah.
But if you quit at the moment it gets tough, you're never learning how to be tough.
No, not at all.
And if you don't learn how to be tough, and that's where, you know, one other thing I'm touch on is you obviously have a freaking gung-ho hunting partner.
Yeah, I have a couple.
Is it your brother?
I have my buddy Joseph and my brother. They're both diehard. I mean,
the point is, pick your partners.
Yeah.
Guys, I can't tell you, there's a lot of partners out there. You say something about going home, he's like, oh, yeah, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
No, you need a partner that says, don't ever say that to me again. Yeah. We're never leaving early. Don't even breathe that again.
Yeah.
That's what kind of partner you need, right? And I don't care if you're in shape. I don't care if you're not. I don't care if you don't walk 100 yards on your last day. You never leave early.
Yeah.
If you've got an injury, you've got a real serious issue at home or whatever. I mean, let's be real here. But, I'm just going to say one more thing. People don't realize how many bulls that Ryan has killed on day 10.
Yeah.
Day 14. Day 18.
Yeah.
Day 20.
Yeah.
People think that he just goes out there and the bull's just standing out there and he just kills him. No, no. That dude will grind and stay. He'll hunt days without food.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm working on a new thing. I'm working in, guys tell me all the time. I'm kind of going through all my questions on this new project I'm working on. I get all these comments and questions all the time, and I'm picking the best ones, right? Well, I had to quit my hunt early because I ran out of food. I'm like, really? When did you run out of food? Well, I had two more days left, and I said, 2 days? You don't need to eat for 2 days. Folks, we as Americans, we've got it in our minds that we live in this land of gluttony, right? Like if we miss a meal, we got to run for the truck. Like Ryan is training himself at some bitches going on hunts with no food.
Really?
So he's training. Now he takes a couple emergency ones in case he gets too bonked out. He has to eat them, but he's gone 3 days with zero food.
Wow.
And hunted 5 miles, 6 miles a day, like putting in work and no food. Why does he do that? Because he's training himself. Because we run out of food on a lot of hunts because that son of a bitch will never come out, right? He says, bring 9 days. You better bring 14 days. I learned that the hard way in a bear hunt right early on. He says, hey, we're going to be in there for 10 days. I'm like, okay, 10 days of food, no problem. Well, day 15, you're like, I thought we were staying here 10 days. Well, we haven't killed a bear yet. I'm like, well, Ryan judges by when you kill, not by how many days the hunt is, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm not saying starve yourself, but I'm saying, guys, if you're packing out because you ran out of food the day before the end of your hunt,
yeah,
you're soft.
Well, I've also noticed myself too that I end up, like, I count my calories and my weight because, you know, we're backpack hunting, but for some reason, I still end up with a few bars here and there, right? So, I mean, I personally think, and I think I've heard Brian Barney say this, but if you truly pack 10 bags of food, there's no reason why you can't stretch that to 12 days, I'd say, comfortably.
Or more,
I mean.
Shoot a grouse, something.
Yeah, I mean, you're really skimping on your food bags, like
1,000
calories or something ridiculous, which isn't enough anyway, but you know what I'm getting at.
Right. And we don't do that. And the main reason we can't do that is because we're hunting 100 days. If we tried to go skimpy, we couldn't make it 100 days, guys.
Yeah, you would bomb.
Now, I say this all the time. I was on a podcast not too long ago. Guys asking me, like, about food and stuff. And I said, guys, here's the deal. If you're going to hunt 7 days, you can get by with almost anything. You don't need to cook. You can get by with no cooked food. I don't know if you've tried that backpacking before, but it's not fun. It's not pleasurable, but you can do it. So you can save on the stove weight and all the stuff, right?
Yeah, I like coffee too much.
Yeah, I know. We do too. But so anyway, the point is you can get by with 1,000 calories a day, right? And when you get home, you're like, whoa, I'm just wiped. And then you can rebuild. Well, we got a 10-day hunt, no break, another 10-day hunt, no break, 14-day hunt.
Yeah.
You can't do it. If we get behind, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
So we have to take our food approach. I just did a webinar. I just did a 3-part, 1-hour webinar on doing your own food. I just published it just a few days ago because it's a hot ticket right now, right? And nutritional management on the hunt is critical for long hunts, let's call it a week. Once you cross that 10, 12-day threshold, things start unraveling nutritionally pretty fast, right? And especially with water and dehydration. And you got to be super careful about that. Now, food you can go without with. Water, obviously, you can't. So my whole point with that whole story was being without food a couple of days, guys, it just makes you tougher.
Right.
And the tougher you are, the more elk you're going to kill. I'm just telling you right now.
Yeah.
And whether it's fitness or mental, they both are equal. I know guys that are super, super fit. They get a little blister. They get their feet wet. They're finished.
Yeah.
The dudes could hike up every mountain, could kill me in the mountains, but they can't stand to be uncomfortable. They can't stand to miss a meal. They can't stand if they can't talk to their wife if we're out of cell service. They can't stand if they get a little damp. And they can't stand when they get in their bag and their clothes are wet. And they can't stand it if the tent is leaking. All these things. Because they just aren't tough enough. Because they have not trained themselves to be tough enough. Guys, I'm not tougher than anybody else. I've just lived through a lot of tough stuff hunting just by being out there so much that it just doesn't seem like it's that hard.
Yeah, you've learned to suffer and be okay with it. And that's kind of what it comes down to.
And that's my whole point is if you can make yourself fight through these hunts that aren't so fun, dude, you're setting yourself up for success.
Yeah.
You really are. So anyway, I hope people got a little bit out of that.
Yeah. Well, I can say that probably this might sound crazy, but one of the hunts, if not the probably the most proudest hunt I've ever been on for myself was in Nevada. I drew a deer tag, archery deer tag, that I shouldn't have drawn. I got it as a leftover basically, or a return tag. And I went over there solo. It was my first solo big trip. I was gone for 10 days. And I saw a lot of bucks, had some chances, but I didn't kill one. And, you know, some people would say that wasn't a success. And, you know, me in my earlier years would probably say the same. But looking back at that hunt, like when I was driving home, I was just super proud of myself that I didn't quit, frankly, that I stuck it out. I had so many excuses and so many reasons why to leave. I had nobody there to glass for me while I was sneaking in, blah, 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 blah. I was bored. There was no deer. It was too hot, blah, blah. You know, I had all those things going through my mind, but I stuck it out. And I'm super proud of that still, that I didn't quit on that hunt. So I get what you're saying for sure.
Well, but the next time you're like, the next time you run into something like that, you'd be like, well, it's not as bad as Nevada.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it's not as bad as this or whatever. I mean, I've been on some horrendous hunts, right? Like some crazy shit. And I just don't think I'm ever going to have too many hunts worse than that. So it's always like, well, I made that one and, you know, I didn't die there, so I'm probably not going to die here. So we talked about that hunting partner thing, guys, is critical. Picking, you know, a lot of people are stuck with their partners too. Like, they've got a brother that they've always hunted with. So I know there's some dynamics that have to be dealt with, but you've got to do some self-reflecting on that because you want to hunt with, well, why do you think I want to hunt with Ryan? Now, Ryan and I don't go on. We might hunt a hunt or two a year together. But the only reason I do it is I want to put myself in that situation. Because if I'm in that situation, I'm going to become a better hunter automatically.
Right.
Because there's no shortcuts with that dude, right? And there's no quitting early. None of those things that are not even discussed. And so you got to put yourself in the position, you know, where you've got the right partner. No matter what, you're going to do it. And you just self-talk to yourself before you even do your hunt, and you're not going to do it. Yeah. If you leave the door open, if you say, well, I'm going to hunt, if it just doesn't go good, honey, I'm going to come back. If you say that in your mind, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, chances are you're coming back.
Chances are you're going to quit early. If you say, honey, no matter what, I'm staying till the 14th. Yeah. But there could be a chance that I'm staying till the 15th.
Yeah.
If I kill something. And she's like, well, we've got this and this. I said, I know. I'm going to be here, but there's a chance that I might not be.
Yeah.
Well, then you're staying. Well, you got a better chance of staying.
Yeah.
So, it's good stuff.
All right, man. Well, I've kept you for like an hour and a half, and I know it's getting late. So
we always get on. It seems like it's never that long, but
I always enjoy chatting with you.
Well, I haven't talked to anybody about this yet, but before we go, I want to tell you about a new thing I'm doing. So just today, I just made the deal today with Peaks is I'm going to start doing a vodcast, just a video cast, not a podcast. It's short format. It's 15 minutes once a week. And it's just going to be me breaking down Montana FWP. Very statistically, or I'm gonna have a feature story every week, And then I'm going to go through two or three tech tips every week, like little short little nuggets, like how to do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And maybe touch on a couple gear things. But really, what's happening in the West, what's coming up, what, you know, what tag challenges we're all facing, just some short nuggets, because the long form podcasts and stuff are great, right? And there's a great place for them. But there's also, I feel like there's a place for this, like, that there's nothing out there. It's like, what's going on in the West right now? I want 20 minutes or 15 minutes of what's happening.
Yeah.
So every week I'm going to research all the news, all the stuff. I'm going to pick out the things that I think are important to us. And I'm going to do this podcast for 15 minutes every week, even from the field.
Oh, I look forward to seeing that. That'll be cool.
I got a Starlink Mini, which I ran this year, packing with my llamas. And I did some live from the hunt updates this year to kind of test out the theory.
Yeah, I saw them.
So the plan is to do 26 shows in studio when I'm home.
Yeah.
And then 26 in the field.
Oh, that'll be really cool.
And so I'm excited. It's going to be called the Thrive Podcast. So we should have it launched or have information out in a few weeks, but or in a couple of weeks. I mean, my goal is to start in early January, so I got to get going. I'm building my studio out right now. And, you know, I don't want to get into the podcast world because it's just there's enough hunting podcast great ones like this one. There's no need for another one, in my opinion. But I do like current news in the West. I think people aren't being told the real story.
Yeah.
Like this disaster Idaho tag situation.
Oh, man.
The Montana management of mule deer. The guys, what's going to happen with this Colorado draw? Nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody knows yet.
Nobody knows how many tags.
No.
If they give out 50,000 tags, 30,000 tags, where's everybody going to go?
Right. I mean, it's going
to all of a sudden, the points you need for Wyoming went from 3 or 4 to 5 or 6.
Well, it's already at 5 last year, and it's right. 6 this year. I've been chasing that for 6 years.
Yeah.
Already.
So, you know, people want to know, what can I do to get an elk tag every year?
Yeah.
Well, there's a strategy. Now, it's not exactly a cheap strategy.
Right.
But there is a strategy that I use to have elk tag. Now, I also live in Montana, which is pretty cool. But, you know, just I've already brainstormed. I did a big brainstorm session. I just wrapped up tonight. I got 50 feature items already that awesome. that I want to talk about.
Well, I can't wait.
I won't get to all of them, but I think people are going to like it. I'm excited about doing it. It's going to be fun. Hey, if nothing else, you're going to hear the truth. I mean, and you're going to hear raw, and I probably will get shut down. Like Peaks probably will pull the plug after 2 or 3 episodes. So you better listen to the first couple because I might be like yanked off the air.
Yeah. Oh, well, that'll be awesome. I look forward to checking that out.
Yeah, man, it's going to be fun. So. Well, thanks for having me on, man. It's always good. I love talking to you. You get after it as much as anybody I know. I like how open you are to learning things, and you're always got your head in the game, and that's one of the reasons you're killing stuff every year. I like that. You don't complain about nothing. I like it.
I get grumpy from time to time, but that's the nature of the beast.
Oh, well, that's good.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I've learned a ton from you guys over the years, and I always love chatting with you. I can't believe how fast time flies when we're chatting, but.
Well, you know, you got to learn. I've made every mistake in the book, Steve, every mistake. And unfortunately, I've made every mistake probably 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I always say is you don't follow me or don't take my courses or don't do anything because you think you're going to learn these secret, you know, you're going to learn how to avoid mistakes.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn, like, I have a really good knack for finding elk. I just do. I mean, now, killing giant bulls, I'm probably not your guy. But if you want to find elk, I'm probably your guy. So, you know, like I said, this will be my 35th season coming up. And the first, what was it, 28 years was from Missouri.
Yeah.
That ain't easy, boys.
No way.
So I learned the hard way a few things. And I never hunt the same places twice.
Yeah.
Now, I do a few here and there, but rarely. So you can't do that and not learn a few things about finding elk. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Oh, you put your time.
I put my time in for that. And I love the adventure. I'd rather go to a new place every year and kill an elk every other year than go to the same place every single year and kill an elk every year.
Yeah.
I just would. I love new places. I love breaking them down. I like exploring them. I like the risk involved. I like everything.
Yeah.
And, but that's not the most successful formula. It's the most successful formula is to be kind of a mixture of history and learning a place with not staying too long.
Yeah. Cause it's not going to be there forever.
Yeah. And if the minute it's not doing what it needs, you move on.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys I talk to. Yeah. I kill a raghorn every year. So I'm good. You know, or I kill a cow or a bull every couple of years. I would just keep going to the same spot. I would cut my throat if I had to hunt like that.
Yeah.
But some guys love it, whatever. It's fine. And, there is some success is kind of a mixture of the two, to be honest. Consistent success. All right. Well, thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, guys. I mean, I'm sure you know who Mark Livesay is, but if you've been living under a rock, make sure you hop on social media and check out Treeline Pursuits. It's worth every penny in my opinion. So go check that out.
And the bear tours, we're doing 5 city bear tour this year. So we're getting ready to launch all the dates and the locations. Man, I get to announce a couple things on your podcast, right? I appreciate it. We got that Thrive Vodcast coming out, and then our Vodcast, whatever that trendy woke name is. I don't know if I like it. But and we've got 5 city bear tour elk tours coming. So we expanded some different cities. So try to get closer to people. Say, you know, they don't have to travel as far.
Yeah.
If they want to come to one. So hopefully you guys will check that out. But treelineacademy.net is all my stuff is there too, or my Instagram channel, Treeline Pursuits.
Yeah. And make sure you guys just check out the description in the podcast. I'll have a link to Mark's course right there. You can click on it. It'll take you right there. So.
Well, also by the time you have show notes, right, on your.
Yes.
You put the code in we talked about, right?
Yes. So, I will put the code in to save you guys some money over
there. Yeah. You can, if you sign up for anything that I've got to offer, use the code, so it'll save you some money and it'll support Steve and his podcast too. So it's a double winner.
Win-win for everybody.
Okay, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Mark, you have a good night.
Yep. Thank you.